In the second week of November 2021, about 50 postdoctoral researchers from institutions in Denmark and around the world joined the Danish Diabetes Academy Winter School for Postdocs in Malaga, Spain. During the winter school, they all took up a challenge to look outward. Outward from their own research projects, outward to investigate how academics and their science interact with various aspects of society. They each selected one of six topics. And together in small teams, they discussed and evaluated the current relationships around their topic, and then proposed how they might build a stronger bridge between scientists and society. We encourage them to find their voice, to dream big, to make a difference, but also to make choices. This is Postdocs Talking, a podcast about their challenges and solutions. Today we have Kasper Sale Poulsen and Anja Elaine Sørensen here in the studio with us. Both are postdocs in Denmark, Kasper at the University of Copenhagen, and Anja at Roskilde University. And we're going to hear more about the challenge topic their group tackled at the winter school. Take it to the virtual streets, education, and social media. And what an expert in the area has to say about it. I'm your host, Gretchen Rapaski, and you're listening to Postdocs Talking. Hi, Kasper. Hi, Anja. And welcome. It's great to have you here with us today.
Hello.
Hey.
So tell us, what drew your interest to the topic of education and social media?
I think from my point of view, I'm not very into social media, so I thought it was interesting. Maybe there were some new platforms where science was more a factor, so that was what drew me into it.
I think the fact that social media is such a big platform where you actually gain a lot of information, seeing how we could as scientists either sculpture or contribute or just be a part of that. And I think we need to be a part of that. That kind of drew my interest to the challenge, I think.
So as you mentioned, it's quite a big platforms. It's quite a big space out there. And it does really have this wide global interest and thinking of different formats at different ages. And so to me, it's a really wide topic. So I wonder if you can tease out and tell us, what is the challenge that you decided to focus in on in this topic?
So maybe to give a little bit of background of the group work. So to begin with, we were discussing a lot of what is actually the problem about social media in science. And I think at one point, it's definitely an issue that it's difficult to know what is based on something somebody has made up or it's difficult to know what people's interest is behind a post. And from that, we kind of turn to how a person is then interacting with this information. That's the important part.
Yeah. And I think the fact that the accessibility of the internet and hence platforms, I think that made us also question, or like, we are not able to hinder whatever people are putting up online. So we thought it might be better to look inwards and look at the recipient, that he or she should be able to pick apart whatever posts, pictures, news is out there. So we dress them as best possible to deal with that information out there.
And that's something that's really close to your experience as scientists too, because you can be on that receiving side to try to understand how is this being received by an audience.
Definitely. Definitely.
So you talked about the what is the problem? You talked about figuring that out in your group work, the how do we address this with all the multiple platforms, and a lot about the accessibility. Can you give an example of what somebody might encounter on social media related to science?
I think especially with the COVID situation, there has been a lot of information out there and a lot of either self-claimed experts or scientists trying to actually educate or tell people, well, I'm actually doing the research behind a specific post, trying to get the general population into the numbers, showing them figures, but sifting through as a common person to through all that of information out there, that might be difficult. Even for us as scientists, I find it difficult sometimes. Seeing, even though I see posts from SSI, State and Serums Institute, or you see posts from the, I would say, reliable sources, it's a lot of information, and they use sometimes difficult words or terms that you need to learn or know. So if we don't educate people.
Is there any aspect of this problem that makes it hard for the public to find value in science?
I think definitely with, but that's probably more the whole media, how media is today, that you might tend to focus much more on simpler explanations. And I really like to take this Trump when he suggested to drink, was it chlorine? And that got a lot of interest in general. And I mean, he's also the at that time president of the U.S. So and that really shows that everybody can be an expert suddenly, right? And some might also get a lot of time speaking about their self-claimed expertise in a subject. And that really puts it on the edge in this case, right? So that's some of the negative parts that some might give a much easier explanation, but it definitely has some scientific holes.
And that's one of those really great examples of the simplicity. Everybody has bleach in their house and, oh, okay, I can just go to my kitchen cabinet and take a little remedy from here. The simplicity and then the high power that is making the claim makes it very confusing for the public.
And I think one of the issues is also that it has to be disseminated so fast that in science we have discussions and we don't know a lot of things. And since it has to be put up there immediately, people tend to forget that science is not a complete truth or anything. It's a process. And we are all...
And sometimes we don't have
smarter.
The answers, yeah. Right? Sometimes we don't know. But as a scientist, we're trained in it's okay not to know. As long as we know the gaps or know our unknowns, it's okay. But my impression is that the general public would like the either or situation. Should or shouldn't we do the vaccines? Should or shouldn't we wear masks? And in case that's the truth or whatnot, and then have concrete reasons for not to take the vaccines or not to wear masks or the other way around. And as scientists, we go, well, there is this probability that if, and a lot of ifs, and it's okay.
And it's a really interesting mix of not science then, because it's also social science we can, from a scientific point of view, say that this... we will probably get, let's say, 1,000 less deaths due to corona. But then we might have 500 that commit suicide. And so this very complex decision is not just, it's politics, it's social science, it's...
public health.
Public
it's
health
in
general.
It's the large picture of public health.
Yeah.
And it's not always black and white, right?
Nope,
there's a lot of gray, a lot of... Yeah,
since we also don't know what's going to happen.
And I think that concern is a little bit counter to how scientists tend to work regularly, because when your method, your scientific method or scientific process is one about identifying questions, making hypotheses about those questions, testing, and then having the open mind, was my hypothesis right? Was my hypothesis wrong? Or is there something in between that I still need to test to find out? That classical process of the scientific method is a bit counter to how the effect that a statement can have on the public. So I can understand that thinking twice, that concern being a challenging aspect for a scientist to balance. One more thought about this challenge topic before we move on, and that's, is there a professional responsibility on the part of scientists to be able to try to make this type of connection to the public with their work, of course, within the areas where they are knowledgeable?
It's important.
Yeah. I think in terms of knowledge, it's important that we share knowledge. Who shares it, if it's the scientists or the universities or research communities, as long as it's been shared and there is some sort of openness in terms of how was it come about, how did the research come about, I think that's very important.
We've mostly focused in on talking about the sort of the aspect of science communication here, but do you have any feeling of how big of usage social media is for people to get their news?
We just discussed earlier today that I think it very much relates to the age groups. So I think the younger you are, the more inclined you are to use social medias as your news source. And I think the older, I'm not going to put an age on it, but the older generation might still tend to use the internet to get their information, but it's going to be from trusted agencies and not Twitter and Facebook or I don't know, Instagram or wherever you would find your information. So I think it's an age-dependent thing. And I think in the future, it's going to be more and more.
Science is growing in complexity, and in many areas becoming harder for the general public to understand. Not too long ago, scientific theories could be explained easily by analogies, but now we have started venturing into the details of the structure of reality that are difficult to understand intuitively. However, in some way, we as scientists have a professional responsibility to explain the benefits of scientific inquiry regardless of the complexity. Public interest motivates allocation of public funds available for research. The more the public appreciates and understands the utility and wonder of science, the more likely it is that the public values scientific advances. Today, there is no shortage of avenues by which we can expand our conversations beyond the scientific community. For instance, with channels like Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, the use of these communication platforms to discuss scientific issues has been especially evident during the COVID-19 pandemic. In Denmark, for example, doctors try to address questions from the general public related to the pandemic through a Facebook group called Ask a Doctor About Coronavirus, where doctors, on a voluntary basis, answer questions from the public. The thirst for this interaction is clear, as the platform now has over 60,000 followers, emphasizing how important and beneficial social media can be as a bridge between scientists and the public. A study from Reuters Digital News Report in 2015 mapped the use of social media as a news source and showed that nearly 50% of Danes use social media as a news source, emphasizing that what is shared on social media indeed reaches a large portion of the general public. It's clear that there is an ever-increasing need for scientists to engage with the public and learn how to best navigate the jungle of social media. So let's talk a bit about your solution. So what I hear in you in this discussion about the challenge as you saw it is really trying to come up with a way to help people sift through, look at the quality, better understand what it is that they're what they have access to out there. So what solution do you have to that challenge?
So we decided to focus on the younger generation, so kids and adolescents. And more on in the perspective of how can we make them be more critical of the information, but also getting them interested in science and also the scientific process, because it is actually really interesting that it's not just the truth. It's always a moving field.
So let's dig in a little bit and let's hear a bit about the details of your solution. How does your solution address these goals?
Well, we thought about engaging with an already established center called LIFE, in which high schools are able to come in, see real life laboratories, do good casework in terms of real life situations, just to both motivate and inspire. So within the framework of LIFE, try to work together with them to make good either cases that could highlight the whole scientific process and improve or at least aid in developing these critical thinking skills that we think is very important to learn in order to be able to see through what's good or not good online.
Yes, it was also the educational material. We discussed how difficult it was to get into the Danish school system curriculum, but that would maybe be an end goal. So both developing some material that you can provide to teachers, and then we never got to what the material actually is, but that it should definitely just, it should not just be scientists that were developing this material. It should be a focus group with, of course, teachers, but also all these other parts of science that are interesting in a context of critical thinking and the scientific process. And
in thinking about the implementation, I know this is hard and, you know, thinking far downstream, but if a first critical step we kind of isolated as figuring out, is there a possible connection to make with existing resources? Down the road, you have the idea of putting together an interdisciplinary focus group in order to develop really good, on-target, outstanding material, and then to implement that. What obstacles do you see in that process?
I would say from a researcher's perspective, you might not want to participate in the educational part, the teaching part of this. You might want to focus solely on doing the classical research. So you might have people saying, well, if that's part of my job description, then this is not for me. And that could be an obstacle.
Tell me a little bit about this interdisciplinary focus group that you envisioned as being part of the solution.
I think it came more from the fact that there's a lot of aspects in making a program. You have to have the kids' view on what's interesting for them. Then you would have to have persons that know how to actually structure a program, because I think we could come up with the science, but how to pick apart the science to make it interesting for kids, that's a whole different thing. So we need to have this interdisciplinary approach.
And I think it was also an acceptance of that we would not be able to come up with a framework or program that could be distributed right away. So we don't really have the solution.
Well, I think your group has identified a really good potential partner, and also the importance of finding out what's out there. And how do you take your solution idea of critical thinking skills in children and understanding and learning about the scientific method? And how do you connect with what's out there? No need to reinvent the wheel, right? We spoke with Ida Duncan, who is a health policy commentator and author. She's someone who is very active in health-related communications overall in Denmark. She's been involved in disseminating easy-to-understand information via social media, through videos, through podcasts, and through workshops. And we told her about your solution, and we asked her what she thought and for some words of advice. So let's listen to what she has to say.
I I was so happy to hear that they actually, I think they found the right solution to this. And I know this has been something people have been talking about for a few years now, and it was accelerated during COVID-19 as well, because it's so evident that we really have this problem of figuring out what's really true and what's not true on the internet. And I think it's definitely the best way to go to try to raise the awareness of this and to try to teach the younger generation on how to discern between facts and opinions. So instead of just, you know, putting out fires here and there, really trying to educate everyone to look at the scientific methods and to try to judge what's reliable and what's not. So I'm really happy that they so quickly found out that it might be a more general approach than just a small attack at one. This problem is so important, and I think we will need to try to be serious about it. And I think one way to do it would be to try to collaborate with other organizations, but do it in a way where we speak with all the different universities in Denmark. We speak with all the scientific organizations we have around, and try to build up a collaboration where everyone involved in this could be the ones speaking to politicians, trying to raise this problem. I think it's important that we do it, a lot of people together, to really have impact on this, and then try to go directly at the politicians being responsible for this, and try to speak up this agenda about the difficulties in figuring out what's really misinformation and what is evidence-based information on the internet. Because I think it's possible to let the politicians know why this is a problem and what the consequences might be if we don't do anything about it. So I think we have a good case here, but I think it's easier if we try to really establish collaborations around Denmark, and not just smaller only diabetes researchers, but everyone, the full university. I think as young researchers, I think we can start this. And then I think in the end, we probably need the more senior ones to help us raising the topic. But I think as young researchers, we can easily speak up this problem and try to contact the different VIPs in this, and then try to get them on board. And then I think we need to use their authority and their network as well to try to raise awareness of the problem. But I think as young researchers, we can easily be the ones starting this and trying to collect people for the best of the case.
So I'm anxious to hear what crosses your mind listening, Tita.
I'm really fond of the fact that she said that we found a good and best way of dealing with the situation, because putting out fires, as she put it, that's not going to solve the problem. So if we, instead of trying to fix the problem or the situation with social media and news that might be out there that might not be true, giving the younger generation's tool to deal with that information at an earlier stage might prevent the problem from even happening in the future. So I'm very pleased that she sees eye to eye on the case as we did.
Is there any aspect of your solution that you now feel even more committed to?
I would say the fact that she makes it feel like it's possible. She makes it feel like that this could be done, but definitely it needs more hands to do the heavy lifting.
And so, it should be done.
And it should be done, yes. So we need to have senior staff members on board as well with the solution, because they do have a network that we as young scientists do not. So to get more people engaged with the whole situation.
Is there any aspect of the solution that you would change?
I guess this is just my thinking, is that for now it's just ideas and dreams that this could happen. But in order for it to actually happen, steps are needed to be taken either from our side or DDA's side to actually make it step forward. And so far, none of this has been in place. So that would definitely be, if we want this to be a thing in the future, then active step must be taken.
I think that's an excellent point, because when I have been listening to you and thinking about your solution, I have envisioned it as, okay, so somebody needs to reach out to organizations that exist, but no, there's actually work that needs done prior to that, because you're here representing a small group of researchers. There were 6-7 of you in your group, I believe. But that's not enough to foster the young researcher, junior researcher community behind this effort. So there needs to be a facilitation that begins well before you reach out and begin this organization, as Ida put it, with universities and other scientific entities within Denmark, so that you have something strong and solid to take to the more seniors with the wider network with a bit more pool.
Mm-hmm. And then comes the question, when are we supposed to have the time to do that?
Yeah. 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 What is the mechanism to allow that to happen?
Yeah.
But I also still think that a lot of these things are in place at the Life Center. And again, we can offer that we're actually interested in participating, because I'm also, I don't want to be the one making the call and say, now I'm going to spend 37 hours a week on this, besides having my other job.
This is a full-time position, I would say.
Oh, yeah. And more so, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's also why. So the Life Center, people are employed to do this. And what we can offer is that we're actually interested in it and wants to help. So...
Ida also happened to mention in her recording there that we listened to, the need to engage politicians. Is that something that your group also talked about? And if so, in what way? What did you discuss?
Yes. So at the event, so one of the outcomes is also that they are going to take some of the solutions to Folkemødet at Bornholm. And I think that's a really good idea to get some, tell politicians about what we have been doing and maybe start a dialogue of how this might actually be useful in a larger perspective.
I think that's a great initiative, because this is an area that needs their engagement to make implementation eventually happen. Very nice. Well, as we come to a close for today, I have two final questions that I'd like to ask. The first one is for you as yourself, as an individual, what's the most valuable thing that you learned at the winter school or through the activity of this challenge?
I think it was really engaging to hear other people's opinion on it and actually have the discussion, because we were not agreeing at all on some points. But so I think that's also really what is so neat about a challenge like this, is that you actually get into some very interesting discussions where, as we say, there's no black and white, and you can also change your opinion on something based on hearing where other people come from.
And I think the fact that the challenges were fairly open, so that you were able to, within your group, discuss what might or might not be important, and the whole input from the other groups, because you stayed at home, read the challenge, and then you've had some ideas, and then you went to Malaga, and then suddenly it all changed. But that was a good thing. And I think that actually speaks into our challenge, because we're talking about the scientific process, and part of the scientific process is also just discussing stuff and turning a problem upside down, and could you view it from other angles. So we were actually doing the whole evaluating the scientific process within the process.
And it also took us out of our cocoons, right?
Of what, and comfort
you're
zone.
Very, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The participants at the winter school, they come from a whole variety of countries, so they're not all Danes who have gone down to Malaga for a week, but they have actually come from multiple places around the world. And they also have different backgrounds. Some are coming from basic research and some from very, very clinical research and some much more public health epidemiology. So I can understand what you're saying. I think that the discussion can get turned upside down multiple times because you have these different experiences that are coming together.
And I would say that the fact that we are so interdisciplinary and multicultural is the fact that perhaps something happening in a Finnish educational system that might be working well, why not, if it's not already present in a Danish educational system, why not adapt that? So if, and vice versa. So if we end up making a really good program or collaboration, then that could be adapted to other countries' educational system. So it has a wide range.
Yeah, it's a very nice point. Mm-hmm. And my very last question is your chance to leave the listeners with one final thought. What one thing do you want them to remember from listening?
I think mine would be ask questions and just have an open mind. So if there's something online that you read and you don't understand it, scientists are often very interested in explaining. So ask questions and don't feel like it's beneath you to answer those questions. Just be curious.
Yeah. Be curious and critical.
And critical.
Two key words from today, curious and critical.
CC.
Very good. CC. Anja and Kasper, thank you so much for spending time here with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm really looking forward to where this challenge takes you or others in the group or any of your colleagues, and I really wish you all the best with it. You can find additional information about the Winter School and the topic of our show at danishdiabetesacademy.dk. That's danishdiabetesacademy.dk. DK. Many thanks to the Academy for giving postdocs the Winter School and for giving us the opportunity to challenge ourselves. The Academy is a national platform aimed to strengthen basic and clinical diabetes research in Denmark by enhancing the quality of research education through training the next generation of leaders in science. The Academy operates thanks to funding from the Novo Nordisk Foundation since 2012. This has been episode 5 of Postdocs Talking. Stay tuned for our next episode when we take up the challenge of how scientists might find their inner artist. Our program today has been produced by the podcast agency Context & Lyd. I'm Gretchen Rapaski, and we'll be back with more Postdocs Talking. Thanks for listening.